Hi, good evening, everyone. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are people who are making a difference in the collective as we make tremendous changes in our species, hopefully for the greatest reasons we can imagine. And my Paradigm Shifter tonight's been on before, a very, very delightful person who's been making a difference in business, and this is a time on the planet where that's really crucial. So my guest tonight is Peter Matisse. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you, Veronica.
And Conscious Business Institute, that's your project, isn't it? That's something that you started, Peter?
Yes, yeah. I founded the Conscious Business Institute about 4 years ago.
Now, you were in business, weren't you? And weren't you a venture capitalist and handled an awful lot of grand wealth and so on?
Yes, yeah, yeah. I'm a recovering venture capitalist. I used to be an engineer, and I had my own software company, which I sold, and then I got sucked into the venture capital community and worked for Apex Partners, one of the larger venture capital firms, both in Europe and in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I saw along my way that business wasn't run in a way that it could be run. There was always people were checked out of their jobs, 50% really wanted to do something completely different. So I always ask the question, isn't there another way to run business?
And that's so what did you do? Did you just quit?
It took me a long time. I was tinkering around and I thought, can I change business within the business community? But eventually I realized if I really want to find a different paradigm to run companies, I need to get out of the environment. And so I quit my position as a venture capitalist back in Germany at that time, packed my suitcases and came back to California where I wanted to live. And it took me about 3-4 years before I actually founded the Conscious Business Institute.
What did you do in the interim? Is that where you became a shaman or you studied shamanism?
I actually got involved with Native American practices, with psychics, with shamanism, with really different ways to look at our world in 1996 after I sold my software company. Hmm. And so they planted the seed quite early, 15 years ago, and it took a little while until it grew. And when I went to Santa Barbara in 2003, I first started working with leaders, and I gave workshops about purpose and about working in a different way, mostly with individuals, though. And then on a flight from New York to Charlotte, when I was between two workshops, I was dozing by the window, and I got this picture about the Conscious Business Institute with its four pillars, which are on the website, and it really struck me like a lightning and said, this is what I have to do. And so a year later, I founded it. It took me a little guts, so after a year later, I actually decided to go about it and found it.
So what are the four pillars? I think you should talk about that for a minute.
Well, the four pillars are management, consulting, strategy consulting. They are leadership development, they are research, and they are certification. Mm-hmm. And funding, actually, research, certification, and funding. And we mostly focus at the moment on the first two pillars, which is leadership development and management consulting. And the reason why we do that is that we believe that if we want to instill change in business or in our personal lives, it's not about business. It's about individuals. It's about ourselves. It's about the manager. It's about every individual. And so if we want to create change in a company, we have to start with the individual. And that's why we address leadership development and personal development as the core. And from there, we go into the team, into the organization, into the business strategy.
So have you jumped into some very grand or some huge corporations with this individual? I gather it's a move toward individual authenticity in the context of work, is it?
Yes, yeah.
And so have you had much experience doing that? I mean, can you give us some examples of going into a company to do that, to disrupt it that deeply?
Yeah, I actually can.
Oh, good.
We started off working with smaller companies because that's where I came from and where the partners that I worked with came from. And we thought if we could make a difference in small companies, they're so flexible, we could actually make a big impact in those smaller entities. So we got involved in small companies, and we thought if we were switched on as a team and a little more conscious and brought some different practices to a business, the business would change. And it did to some extent, but we found after about 12, 15 months that pretty much exactly the same problems kept reappearing. People were burnt out, overselling, bills weren't paid, integrity issues. And it prompted me personally to say, no, this is not the way to go. If we really want to build a different way, this is not the way to go. So I pulled the plug and put everything on hold again and took about 12 months to develop these approaches that we now work with in companies.
Why do you think that people got into that burned out stage? Do you think you didn't pursue who they really were or what their dreams were, or what was the big problem?
That's the big thing here, and this is kind of a big statement that we make, but our model of success is fundamentally broken. It's our model of success that's making us suffer. And if we don't address this model of success, then we will always push energy, we will always work harder, we will always strive more and more and more. And what we yearn for, the sense of relaxation, the sense of arriving somewhere, the sense of flow, will always evade us.
So success meaning the definition of the term and how that's embodied by us all in our drives and initiatives, or what?
Yeah, let me get a little more concrete. The model of success that we are currently working upon is actually a Neolithic model. It's been developed a long, long, long time ago, and we're schlepping it around on our backs for thousands of years. And we call it the model of dominance and subservience.
Aha.
So this model of dominance and subservience has been developed in the agrarian society when we started planting seeds and actually living in not living in tribes anymore, but living in communities. And so it grew that there was somebody who owned the land, who owned the resources, and that became the dominator. And we can see that throughout history, that this dominating position has prevailed in companies today, in governments, the kings in the 15th, 16th centuries, the typical dominators. Mm-hmm. And then as a counterpart, which is really important, is that we became subservient to a dominator. So this subservient role is not something that we're the victim, but we are actually actively subservient to a dominator. So basically, this model of dominance and subservience is governed by three rules, which means I have to dominate the resources or somebody else will dominate. And the resources are the ones that we need for our survival. Today it's about money. So I have to get as much money in my pocket or somebody else will dominate me.
Mm.
Yeah? Money or power. And if I can't...
That's kind of a fear-based model then, huh?
It is a completely fear-based model. Yeah, it is based on fear, and where there's fear, there cannot be flow. So as long as we work according to this model of dominance and subservience, we cannot get into the flow. We cannot experience the ease and the well-being that we want. We cannot build sustainable companies as long as we build them upon this model of dominance and subservience.
So when you were finding your people burned out, you were still on that model?
When you find your people burned out,
when
you yourself are burned out, you're chasing a carrot for future compensation, basically. What we want to do is we want to get to some place.
Mm-hmm.
And what we usually want to get is, the typical things. We want to have the house by the beach. We want to have the money in our bank. We want to have the beautiful relationship. We want to achieve something. And we are chasing a carrot. And I'm not saying that we can't reach that, but we need to change the way we go after those goals that we have.
So you took 12 months to cogitate that, and what did you come up with?
Well, I put everything that I experienced and the people that I worked with, we put everything in basket, from that developed basically a new model that we take out to work with individuals. It's a very concrete model, and it's an eight-step process that we take people through. And we start with the individual. So we work with small companies up to companies with 300,000-400,000 employees at the moment. And we work with the individuals first and get them in a position that they say, oh, my God, this is the way I need to change it. And then we go into we spread it out from there into the team, core leadership team first, and then into the broader team.
So when you're changing, when the individuals are discovering the changes that they prefer, they're like an authentication or finding their own gifts or what they want to express? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, it's basically two steps. The first step is a really beautiful process, actually, is to have people recognize who they really are here. Now, we come to this world, and from day one, we're basically told what we have to do and who we have to be, and then we get into school, and we have to get better grades, and we have to make this, and we have to make that. But nobody in our world usually recognizes us for who we really are, what we are here to be. And so once we do that, and we have methodologies to do that, we recognize them, and they say, oh, my God, this is really who I am, and I'm completely... I can see now why I'm experiencing so much struggle in my life, because I'm living not my true being. You know, and we have certain ways to get to that point. And so after the first step, people are usually saying, my God, thank God, this is what I want to live now in my life. This is who I am. These are my talents. This is what I want to express with them. Now it makes sense. Now, the second step is a little more tricky, because there's a reason why we haven't expressed that in our life for the past 30, 40, 50 years that we're alive. And the reason is that what we call the emotional system, there's something that's holding us back, which is a fear-based decision about our life. And so we need to get to that point. We need to look at the underbelly of this thing and have us understand why we are actually holding back from living our authentic personality.
That could be lineage or self, could be self-suppression or patterned by family or what?
It's usually something we come to the planet with, and then it is enforced and reinforced through our environment. So there are, for example, three decisions that we make about life along the way, and one of these decisions is I'm rejected. Another decision is I reject this body. And the third decision is I reject this plane, this reality here. And so whenever we experience a moment where we are freaked out, where we are angry, where we are afraid that we are running out of money, when somebody, pardon my French here, pisses us off, or when we're emotionally tense, we can trace any emotional event back to this one decision that we've made about life. For example, I am rejected.
Hmm.
And that's actually very helpful, because right now we don't know why we behave in certain ways. You know, do I have to change something in my behavior, or do I have to change something in my job or in my way I talk to people? Do I have to become a better leader? There are so many things that are being thrown at us that if we know that it's just this one single decision, that's something we can work with. You know, that's something we can pay attention to.
Have you watched people springboard out of that?
Yes, yeah, it's sometimes is a springboard process. Sometimes people don't even realize, and sometimes it takes a little time. Because right now our decisions are made in a black box when we are not in power. When we're out of power, when we're not in our authentic power, we step into this black box and we don't really know what happens in that black box. There's just a decision that comes down at the bottom, out of the bottom. And what we're doing is we're bringing light into this black box so people can say, oh my God, this is why I make these decisions. This is why I'm having trouble getting venture capital into my company, because it leads to exactly the same decision. This is why I have trouble with my team, conflicts, etc.
Which is because I'm rejected.
Yeah, and because I'm rejected, I'm making a certain decision as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And the decision that we make when we're triggered with that decision, for example, is always out of power. It's not in our authentic power.
Interesting. So what's the next step?
Well, the first step obviously is for us to become aware of that. And I guess that's why this Conscious Business Institute came to me, because once people become aware and conscious about their emotional system, about their contribution to the emotional system of an organization, the energy starts to change. And that's a very interesting and really, really humbling process, actually, because there's really nothing that needs to be done. Once people become conscious about it, it starts to change.
So it's conscious of the fact that they have some intrinsic role that keeps the business going?
Yes, that their contribution to the system. So whenever they make an out-of-power decision, out of fear, for example, or out of an emotional reaction, once they become conscious and accountable for that, they can change it. Hmm. And I give you an example. We worked with a company up in Washington, and that company was a fairly small company. It had about $1 million in revenue, and it was around for 5-6 years, and they had a really hard time breaking through this barrier of $1 million. The CEO called me. We started working with each other one-on-one first, and then with a few individuals inside the company. And just on this model, and the CEO called me up about 12 months later, 14 months later or so, and he said, "Peter, I don't believe what happened. I can't even tell what happened, but we've grown 700% in our company, and I don't even know why. I was able to attract the person as a CEO that I wanted. I was able to move into the business area that I wanted to move into. And for some reason, the barriers have been eliminated from our company." And I attribute that to your program. And we hear that over and over again with the people that we work with. Once we become conscious about something, we can't deny its existence anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if you see the first time an airplane flying through the air for the first time, suddenly there's something in the air and you can't deny it anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you feel that you can possibly do it.
You can possibly do it, but you can't trick yourself anymore. You know, if somebody tells you there's an airplane flying through the air, you can
say,
yeah.
Your phone is coming out again. It's not working too well right now.
Oh.
Hello, we're back. We had a little bit of a break, but I guess that was good for us at some level. But Peter, I know you weren't quite finished with something, but I want to get this concept in that we're having a huge economic crisis around the planet. And I bet you noticed that, huh?
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking that the consciousness in business would be, to me, as an idealist, it would be really perfect way to handle this and sort of change things around. But I'm wondering if it's just messing things up so that it's too expensive for people to make these changes right now, or what do you have to say about this economic crisis, A? And B, one other comment I wanted to make was in your blog, you have this amazing quote, which is all about financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the one? It's egoistic, are their actions reckless, they're striving for profit, irrepressible, the drive of the individual for more recognition and possession. In a society governed by competition as a leading principle, this drive peaks in the constant desire to be the first. So tell people where that's from.
You remind me.
It comes from
long time ago.
2,400 years old,
yeah.
And it's a description of the Peloponnesian War by the Greek philosopher Thucydides.
Yeah.
I love those old quotes, you know, but I know we're in a financial crisis around the planet, or maybe it's a financial birthing. I like to look at it that way.
Well, we'll see what it comes to, but I'll answer this in two ways. The first way is, thanks for that quote again, because it really shows that exactly the same issues that we're grappling with today have been happening for the past thousands of years.
And for the same reasons, eh?
For the same reasons. Again, it's this model of dominant subservience upon which everything is built, which actually culminates in what I call, or what we call, the financial era, or the financialization. So we're kind of in an end stadium of this model of dominance and subservience, where the finance industry, the financial services industry, the banks, the hedge funds, the stock markets, the venture capitalists, and all those people with the money in the pockets that really don't provide a product but a service,
mm-hmm.
They're taking over our economy.
Mm-hmm. Or have taken it over already.
Yeah, they have taken it over, and it happened, if we look back, it happened in the Roman Empire, it happened in the Dutch Empire, it happened in the British Empire, it happened in the Habsburg in Spain, etc. It went through the same progression, that at some point in time, the financial elite took over, and they invested their money into financial products instead of in genuine goods. So the value of actually producing something, the actual value of our country, dissipates. It disappears as we outsource stuff, etc. And so we are just trading financial paper instruments. And what happens is this stage of financialization is that oftentimes it led to a complete collapse of an entire empire, like the Dutch Empire or the British Empire. It collapsed, period, finished. And I'm not suggesting that that's happening with the United States here, but we can see that it's really a critical time here.
Mm-hmm.
And some say that the financial crisis is kind of over and it's done with, but I don't believe it.
I don't believe it either. No.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in the system that is just popping to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to get a little more intense, I believe. And so as individuals, we have two options. The first option is we can look at this and say, my God, what's really happening? Isn't there another way to do it? And a few people do that, so there's a real opportunity to change the way we conduct business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can see that all around the world, that also the young generation, they're just sick and tired of doing it the old way. You know, the younger generation that's now getting out of college.
Right.
The masses, however, I believe will still hold on tighter and tighter and tighter because they are really getting afraid and really getting exhausted. And starting to work harder, to push harder, to do more, to try to do it more and more the old way.
And isn't entrepreneurism one of the ways, and also the internet, aren't those two ways of, or maybe they're very connected, of doing business differently and consciously?
I'm not sure about consciously. I don't think it has anything to do with consciously. We can build an internet business, and we can also build a new company in a completely unconscious way. And we see it every day with entrepreneurs that we have that run themselves into the ground because they just want to do it in a way where they say, my God, it's never going to happen. I think the internet is a great opportunity, and entrepreneurship is a great opportunity for now, because this is the time where we birth new ideas, and it's a great opportunity to build new companies. There are so many people out there that don't have jobs, so we can hire them or we can bring them together. But again, we need to look at the way in how we build the company. Otherwise, we might make money. Yes, we might make a lot of money, actually. But we end up in the same position where we're exhausted, where we're tired and unfulfilled in most cases.
Have you had, this is going to sound, I don't know, have you had experiences where it's really cost-effective for a company that's actually making good money to turn conscious, you know what I mean, to be inspired by your team? Is it very expensive? Is it cost-effective? Does it take a long time for it to become cost-effective?
No, actually not. It is a progress. You know, it's not something you go in and then something happens and then you put a switch on one and then suddenly everything changes.
Hmm.
But when we talk to larger companies, we often hear leadership programs don't really make a difference. How are you different? You know, the leadership programs go
question.
In, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, how are you different? Are you leaving a lasting impact? And from our experience, what we don't do is sheep dips. So we don't dip a sheep in the color and then the color leaves again after a while. What we try to do with our programs, and we've been very successful at that, is drive at that underlying shift, the consciousness shift. If
mm-hmm.
we change our thoughts and our consciousness, again, I mentioned that earlier, we can't deny it anymore.
Mm.
We can't go back, because once we see the truth, we are starting to lie to ourselves if we try to deny it again. So there is a lasting shift once we are willing to look at what's actually going on. And a lot of people are willing at it because they're exhausted and they're asking for new solutions.
Mm. I think that's... Well, also, two things. One is you wanted to take calls, And I did encourage people that you were going to take calls. So if people would like to call and talk to Peter about any of your business concerns or consciousness, or let's narrow it to those fields, eh? Call us at 888-815-9756, 888-815-9756, and we'll see the issues that people are dealing with these days. Business is really a hot subject right now, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it gets to the core, because, again, let me get back to this model of dominance and subservience one more, because the dominance and subservience model is a model that's based on scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough around. And so whatever there's not enough around, love or anything that we need to survive, for example, we try to hoard as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in our life, that's money. Money is the means of survival. So what we are striving for to do, and we can very well see that in our society, is we are trying to make money. Left and right, up and down, we do everything to make money. And if we think that if we have the money, then we reach financial freedom land and everything is going to be hunky-dory. But that's usually not the case. So now, with the economic crisis, money becomes a real pinch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it flares up in our phase and say, oh my God, what's happening? The old system, how I strove for success and how I built my company doesn't work anymore. I've been tricked by our society. I've been working 12-hour days, and for some reason it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, and there's no security, and there's no retirement, and there's none of those things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a setup.
It really is, isn't it? And interesting thing, one of the interesting things you're talking about is helping workers find the truth of who they are and how important they are as a cog in the wheel and the cog in the machine, right?
Yeah.
Because even when the last collapse, there were so many people who lost retirement. And as a friend of mine said, golly, a lot of these, particularly men in their 70s who are counting on that retirement, have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
That's the biggest tragedy of, it's not just business, it's our whole society, isn't it?
Yeah, and there are real tragedies happening in our society. The unemployment is going through the roof, and it'll take a long time for it to come down again. And younger people are coming out of the colleges, and it's going to get pretty tough. And our identity is fixated around our employment oftentimes.
Yes, who are you? What do you do?
Yeah.
Well, so what do you recommend? So here we've got this really shaky perspective of business and, the working force and so on. What do you recommend for young people who are obviously going to have a living, you know?
I recommend getting to know themselves. So and why I recommend that is because they can stand on their own two feet then. Right now, we are basing our lives, if we go into college and if we get our education, it's based on our education, it is based on our reputation, it is based on our position, and that can be cut away at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Positions are not secure anymore. Your college education is not worth much anymore.
No, it's worth a big debt for many kids.
It is worth a big debt. So what's left? Who are you? Who are you after everything has been taken away from you? So we come to this question, who are you? Who am I?
Hmm.
Which I think is the fundamental and the only question that we need to really answer first in our lives. And nobody asks us that, or nobody guides us there.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just address one more why I think that's the fundamental question. If we are making a decision in our lives, and we make decisions from 6 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night when we go to bed, what kind of coffee or tea do I drink? What kind of book do I read? Which coffee? We make decisions all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And for every decision that we make, we basically have three choices. We can say, I'm okay with it. Let's take global warming, for example. We can say, I'm okay with that, and there's nothing that we need to change. Or we can say, I don't care about global warming, there's nothing we need to change in our lives. But as soon as we say, I don't agree with global warming, there's something that comes up as a next question, is what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
So every endeavor that's been created out there, whether it's the foundation of Microsoft or Facebook or Martin Luther King's work or Mahatma Gandhi's work, started with this one question: what can I do? And this question, rephrased, is who am I in relationship to this particular event? So the question, who am I, is really at the very core, it's the defining question of our life, of how we make decisions, of where we end up in our lives. And nobody asks that in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to find some answers to that. That's what we help with.
Well, what kind of businesses, you know, I agree with you totally, and I get really excited about that, but you have been in the trenches working in corporations that are wanting change. What is the nature of the businesses that are more accepting of change? Is it broad spectrum? Is it to do with sustainability or
finances
or what?
Well, it's all across the board. It's all across the board. One big topic right now is trust.
Hmm.
People are holding on to their jobs. You know, the economic crisis, not many people are leaving their jobs, so employers don't really have too much issues with people leaving their jobs. But what they do have an issue with is trust. Because
trusting the employees or trusting, like, who?
Both ways around, because the leaders are trying to push harder and the employees just don't buy it anymore.
Hmm.
So we just worked working with a large company, and they've done some tests, and they came back with that thing, that same thing, that the employees are quite satisfied there, but they don't trust the management, which is a huge problem, because what we sell in our economy is essentially trust. We can't sell a product if we don't trust the product.
And why don't people trust management then? I have my theories, but what would you say?
Why would they trust them, or why would they not trust them?
Why on a mass level don't they trust them? Is it because, well, anyway, I'll let you say.
Well, then they're not authentic.
Right, okay.
They're not authentic. They're trying to manipulate and work for their own benefit oftentimes.
Or it's a numbers game, isn't it?
It's a numbers game. It's fear-based. It's always for a future outcome.
And when
we try to reach a future outcome, whether it's for our own benefit, I want to become the CEO here in this company, or I want to get this new revenue break so I can get promoted again, or I want to bring this great product out or whatever. It's all future goals. And whenever we try to reach for the future goal, we're trying to manipulate something. Yeah, it's we need to find a way to authentically pursue a vision and contribute. And I think that's one thing we need to change.
Are there any companies you know of where that authenticity is really working from the top down in a big company?
Yes.
Like maybe Ford or Honda or something?
I would rather go to Anita Roddick was a great leader at the Body Shop is an example. Another example is SAS Software, the biggest privately held software company, with Jim Goodnight. And a prominent example is Patagonia with Yvonne Chouinard. And if you look at their website, you get a feel for it. It's just very consistent and very authentic. If you go into their offices, from the moment you meet the receptionist, you get the feeling, my God, that guy really wants to sit there. He's in the right place at the right time.
And so it's cost effective for those companies, isn't it?
Very cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
For SAS Software, for example, in the software industry, there's a turnover rate of about 20% at the moment, 17 to 20%. And because SAS Software is run in a different way, they have 4% turnover rate, which saves them, it comes out to maybe 50 million or so a year in the bottom line. That goes right into the bottom line. So it's very cost effective. There are many studies that all these things, if you actually can engage the people, are making you very, very cost effective.
And it's interesting because what we see on a mass level is people working longer and longer hours for no benefits and no time off. And you mentioned what, it's self-actualization, authentication, relaxation, being able to find your gift. We can't live like that, can we?
Well, that's what our mind tells us.
Mm-hmm.
That's what our mind tells us. But there are a few examples that we can see there sowing their juice, in their authentic juice, that they live, and they live extremely well doing that.
Hmm.
And oftentimes, though, they're actors, or though they're performers, or musicians, for example, and we think, my God, I don't have a gift, so I can never end up like that, so I have to work. Mm-hmm. That was my own story, for example. But if we look for our gift, we can find a way to work that is totally in alignment with our energy and our speed of work and what we do, and make great money at it.
So if people are listening right now, and of course there are you listeners out there, can you give us an exercise or a way to find, you know, harvest some of our gifts more easily that we might not be aware of?
Yeah. Again, there's one. There are a couple of processes that we go through with clients, which are really helpful. And it's hard to explain them on the phone. But one thing I can recommend is actually a very, very profound shift, which is a tiny shift, but it's a very profound shift that we do in our programs, which is to make decisions based on essence. And let me explain what that is. Essences are what we call the feeling states that we experience when we get something. So, for example, what we want in our lives is maybe $5 or $10 million. Oops, what the hell is it?
Oh, my. Sounds like we're being beeped. We have a question,
yeah.
I believe. Do you want to be interrupted first, or should we take your more about the essence before we take the call?
I'll just go on until I'm going to be interrupted there, okay?
Okay.
So, the essences are the feeling states we experience when we obtain something. So if we, for example, we want, let's say, $10 million in our bank account. We don't want to work anymore. We want to have that money in our bank. What we are looking for is not the money, actually, but the feeling states that we associate with having that.
Hmm.
So, for example, what we are really striving for is freedom, or a sense of accomplishment, or peace of mind, for example. Those are the feeling states that we get if we have the money.
And self-esteem, I think.
Self-esteem is one which obviously can also be very egocentric, but usually the more natural ones are the ones that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting thing, is that if we look at all the things that we desire in our life, whether it's the house by the beach or the Porsche or the 10 million bucks in the bank or the beautiful relationship, if we've get the perfect outcome of that and then extract all the essences, the feeling states that we want to experience, we come up with a bouquet of essences. It's pretty much the same in all areas that we want. It's not also different. And that's very important to know, because that's really what gets you out of bed in the morning.
Hmm.
Say the freedom, the inspiration, the joy, the creativity, the ease. If you know those 12 to 15 essences that really drive everything in your life, that's where your energy lies, where your passion lies.
So you can say that that's when you get those feelings, even if you haven't got your 10 million, you're having a successful feeling time. Is that right?
Yes, that's one thing. Life is a feeling experience, not a doing experience. So when we feel these essences, when they're fulfilled in our lives, life's great.
Hmm.
Life is perfect. If we have $10 million bank and we feel miserable along the way, life's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to do is we want to nurture these feeling states. If we're striving for the $10 million, for example, we might never get it.
Okay.
So we might work for 20 years, we work our tails off. That's what's happening in our world. And at the end we realize, not quite there.
Mm-hmm.
Was a pretty rough ride.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we make the $10 million, we often realize that after a few years, life goes back to normal. We have our problems, we have our relationships issues, somebody sues us, we get upset, and life goes back to normal.
Goes back to goals. Let's just see, do we have someone waiting for with a question? Hello, are you on the air? Oh, I guess it wasn't anybody.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's right. So if you don't get the feeling of who you are reaching some of your own personal goals in the course of your journey, then we don't get that life that we're looking for, do we?
Yeah. And also by knowing these feeling experiences, these essences, we can nurture those every day through little things. If your essence is beauty, for example, mm-hmm. You can put a flower on your desk every morning. Mm-hmm. And it makes a difference because our body does not distinguish whether we are out in nature in a beautiful place or whether we look at a flower. Mm-hmm. How we experience those feeling states, our body doesn't distinguish. Mm-hmm. So by nurturing them, we get more of it and we become more of it and are able to attract more of it in our life. So there's usually a big shift associated with that when we work with people.
Hmm. So what do you think, what's your prognosis about the business community and this transformation that would really bring, you know, even bring people into their essences as they perform in business and so on? That's a huge quantum leap in the business community, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think we are reaching a tipping point.
I hope so.
Yeah.
When
not,
do you say
not
we
in,
will,
in terms
Peter?
Of mass, I don't think in terms of masses, but in terms of exhaustion.
Oh.
You know, more and more people are willing to look at these things, are stepping away from existing ways to work or to run businesses. Now, it still takes a little guts to get into this process, so many will still veer away and say, my God, I'm not sure whether I have the guts to do it. But I think more and more will do so. The majority of businesses, I'm afraid, will try to continue pushing and trying to continue doing it the old way.
You don't believe that the shift will take care of that, eh? You don't believe that right now? That's true, isn't it?
I'm not sure. It's just a long way to go.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? And
yeah.
It's going to require a lot of people being innovative and going into who they really are in order to create new businesses, isn't it?
Yes. But the positive news is that this is really a shift that happens on every level. So far, many times in our history, we weren't really able to make this shift because we were dependent on those dominators.
Hmm.
But now we can actually step away and we can make the shift on every level. And it's once we do that, it'll be actually supported by our environment. So in this case, the normal leadership approaches, they usually address the top 1% of a company or of our government or whatever. This approach really works for everybody. It doesn't matter whether they're an assistant somewhere or whether they're a sales manager out in the field or whether they're driving a forklift in the warehouse.
Hmm.
Once they take these approaches, they gain their own authentic power, and with that, they gain leadership ability. They might not become a CEO of a company, but they become leaders of their own life.
Hmm.
And they can make empowered decisions.
And that even works in their intimate world or their family life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It really bridges all those all our areas of life.
And have you worked all over the States? Have you done this in other countries as well, or is it mostly in the States?
Mostly in the States and in Europe.
Okay.
With an emphasis on Germany because I'm German. So.
And is it is it more accepted over there, or what's is it about the same proportion or what?
Well, it's actually interesting. It's very interesting because Germany is not so advanced when it comes to new paradigms.
Hmm.
Yeah, they're very advanced when it comes to clean tech, solar, et cetera, but to mind-shifting paradigms, to inner paradigms, they're a little resistant,
hmm.
as you may imagine. California is really at the forefront here. So when I talk to German people, on one hand, I'm facing that, but on the other hand, because there is not so much out there, the pressure is so much bigger.
Hmm.
The yearning to learn about these things and the pressure that these people are undergoing is so much bigger oftentimes that they're just completely ready to work whatever it takes.
You mean the corporate pressure or the financial pressure, the whole system?
Just the life, the corporate pressure. For example, I've been brought up in a way that I have one component which I call yellow, which is the kind of a childlike energy and innocence, a joyfulness, a light being, for example. Mm-hmm. And our culture in Germany doesn't support that. Hmm. You've got to work. You got to grow up. You can't do that anymore. And if you're in California, that's one reason why I'm living here. It's actually encouraged.
Right.
Because California, everybody moves around here. It's just happy and runs around in spandex. So it's a completely different environment.
It's kind of the ragged edge of trying things out and let's see what works. Right?
Yeah.
Do you just love it there?
Here in California?
Yeah.
I like it a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very creative environment, and I like that.
So it seems like, it really seems like this, to me, the waves of this consciousness in business must be moving through. I just feel intuitively that it's got to be moving through a lot of businesses, not just a few, probably beyond your business as well, or your like a lot of people. Are they coming to study in Conscious Business Institute? What kind of services do you run there? Do you work only with corporations, or do you work with individuals? Do you train students? Do you train potential workers with you, or what?
Right now, we're mostly working with companies/corporations and their teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it oftentimes starts with anybody in the company that gets exposed to our programs and then says, it really made a big difference. Can we include that in our company somehow? And so that's oftentimes the avenue we take. And it mm-hmm. starts with individual work with some key people. And then once key people have been exposed to it, we'll bring it into the team more in training sessions. But we have also worked and are still continuing to work with individuals who are interested in these programs. It's just, it doesn't matter where we are in life. We all are exposed to some kind of a work environment.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So you don't function like a school necessarily, except by nature of going into companies as a...
No, not at the moment.
Yeah.
Not
but eventually, hey, that's going to be a model we need.
Maybe, yes.
So would you like to give everybody your how they can find you?
Yeah, the web address is www.consciousbusinessinstitute.com. That's a long word, so consciousbusinessinstitute.com. And that's probably all our information is on there.
And you have some wonderful interviews there, which I've listened to. I've really enjoyed your website, actually.
Yeah.
Very
there are some interviews on there. There's a link to a blog, and we've also blogged on an expert blog on Just Means, which is a sustainability forum. So if you can Google my name there, it'll probably come up.
Are you pretty involved in sustainability?
Somewhat, because we look at sustainability in a different way. We've developed an approach to building sustainable companies, which is a four-tiered approach, and it goes, again, down to the personal sustainability. You know, a lot of companies are looking at environmental sustainability. We don't want to pollute the planet anymore, but it's really the outer of four circles, that's the outmost circle. If we don't have personal sustainability, there's no way that we care about the environment. You know, I always say people don't really care about the environment, period. They only care about the environment once our personal needs are met.
Uh-huh.
If we are running out of money, if we have a problem, we get into our big SUV and we bolt down the street to the doctor.
Mm.
No, we don't care about the environment that moment.
So it's actually a little bit of the self-rejection you were talking about earlier, too, or I'm rejected, isn't it? Isn't that kind of the repulsion that comes against the environment and just trying to do whatever it takes to get through?
Yeah, in my perspective, it's we're shifting into fear mode, and that one I'm rejected is one of the shifts that we make.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as we go into fear mode, a lot of the things, our ideals, our values, what we usually do goes out of the window.
Mm. Well, I'm going to have to sign you off, but it's very, very interesting. I'm very excited about this idea of consciousness in business And I really enjoyed your visit with us. Thank you. Sorry for the interruptions. We had technical difficulties. But they're probably authentic, you know.
Yeah, whatever is fine.
Thank you so much for all your work in the world, Peter, and thanks for your time with us.
Thank you, Veronica.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. So this is Veronica Entwistle talking to Peter Matisse, who is our Consciousness in Business Institute founder and representative tonight. It really is a wonderful thought that people are being, authenticated in the workplace. That's a really great service, isn't it? I want to say to you, call in some frequencies of love. The universe is downloading some tremendous energies these days. Call it in, feel it, run it through your body, and send it out to one another. Thank you so much for being our paradigm-shifting community, and we'll see you on Thursday at 7 p.m. here on amazing VBS Radio. Thank you for listening.